us something from this today. This is medicine.
It's not going on the world wide web.
Huh?
It's not going on the world wide web.
Medicine? Well. You already saw this.
2 years now. I'm just checking. Thank you very much.
So yesterday we heard up to Akura, Krishna and Balaram left Akura, and Balaram and Krishna and the cowboys went for water in the city, and all the residents of Mathura, first the ladies, they had heard about Krishna, they went up on the roof, they saw Krishna, the Mathura Brahmins came. And they were mentioning how fortunate and pious the residents of Vrindavan were because they had the opportunity to see Krishna and Balaram every day as they wandered in the forest as cowherd boys. This is the gopis themselves said, Sanvantam Phalamidam Naparam Vidamaha. This is the perfection of eyesight to see Krishna and Balaram going out in the forest every day. So the pastime continues. So Krishna and Balaram are smiling and they're walking. While they were passing in this way, they saw a washerman and a dyer of clothing. This is called in Sanskrit a
rajak.
Rajakar. Washerman, I think it's a rajak. So he was a washerman and a dyer. Of course. So, Krishna was pleased to ask him for some nice clothing. So he asked him for some of the clothes that he was carrying as the washerman. He also promised that if the washerman would deliver the nicest dyed cloth to him, the washerman would become very happy and all good fortune would be his. Krishna was not a beggar, nor was he in need of clothing, but by this request, he indicated that everyone should be ready to offer Krishna whatever he wants. That is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. Now, read the verses. So the people in Mathura, the ladies and the Brahmins, they were also respectful. So Krishna said, according to the actual Sanskrit, he asked him, Dotani, clean, Ati Uttamani. Ati means very, and Uttama means the topmost. He asked him for the samshi, clothing that was clean and first class. Topmost. He was Rangakaram, Rangakar. He was engaged in dyeing, and Rajakam, Ranga and Raja. He was a dyer and a washer of clothing. So he asked him for the finest, laundered garments that he had. And Krishna said, this is what Krishna's words were. Dehi avyosamutskani angavasansi charhato pravishyati param shreyo dhatus te natra samsaya. What does samsaya mean? Samsaya means doubt, and he said maatra samsaya. There's no doubt in this matter. Krishna said, in a very respectful way actually, please give suitable garments to the two of us who certainly deserve them. If you grant this charity, you will undoubtedly receive the greatest gift. Thus requested by the Supreme Lord, who is perfectly complete in all respects, the arrogant servants of the king became angry and replied insultingly. So Krishna approached him in a very polite way. He asked for some, in one sense it was quite radical, because the washerman was just walking down the road with the clothes of the king, and he was doing his duty, and Krishna said, please give me your clothes, the clothes that you're carrying, wash, and not only some of them, best. So the washerman, very different from the other residents of Mathura, he became very angry and spoke to Krishna in a very harsh way. An insulting way too. Dormada, he was falsely proud because he was Ditya Raja, the servant of the king. So he had already enlisted himself in the service of the king, and he didn't want to be the servant of the Supreme Lord. And also, as we were saying yesterday, Kamsa wasn't actually the king. He had usurped the power. He was in a coup d'etat. So he became angry and insulted Krishna. He said, Idrisani Iva Vasamsi Nityam Girivane Chara Paridatam Kim Urvrinsa Raja Drav Yani Abish Pyata. You impudent boys. Now this is a completely different reaction than the reactions of the servants of the residents of Mathura, because the ladies, they went up on the roofs, and what was their mood? They dropped everything. If they were taking a massage, they stopped taking the massage. When you're taking a massage, who are you serving? Your body. And if they were cooking and serving their family members, they immediately stopped. And if they were even serving the babies, little helpless babies, they put them aside and stopped that. They gave up everything to serve Krishna. And here, the washerman, even though Krishna asked him in a very polite way, the washerman, his mood was, he was proud, and what? He was proud of serving a demon. If you like, you can sit in the chair. It's easier for you, I believe.
Yeah, especially for my digestion today.
Well, you just slip it off. So he's already a servant, and this is a point of the material world, is that we just can't avoid being, we can't avoid being servants. We can't avoid it. So why was he proud? Because he was serving the king. But he would have still been prouder in a proper way if he would have served the Supreme King, the Inka Indra, the king of all kings, Indra. So he said, you impudent boys, you're accustomed to roaming the mountains and forests.
That's true.
And yet, you would dare put on such clothes as these. He did not know the value of those mountains and those forests that Krishna was accustomed to roaming. He's saying, you're a village boy, and these are king's clothes. These are the king's possessions you're asking for. Fools, get out of here quickly. Itasu Grisha Vaivam Pratyam Jati Jivisha. You're fools, Balisha. Go quickly from here, you fools. Do not beg like this. Pratyam Jati. If Jivisha, you have a desire to live. So he spoke to Krishna in a very, very heavy way. In a very insulting way. Gadnanti, Gurnanti, Lumpanti. They tie up, they kill, and loot his house. Vittam, Rajakulani Vai. One who is boldly speaks the king's men, if they find that you're talking like this, asking for the king's thing, this is how you'll be dealt with. They'll tie you up, they'll kill you, and loot your house. Now, Krishna spoke very gently with him, and there are other ways that he could have answered, even if he wanted to say no. And in fact, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives in one of his comments, on this verse, he gives another meaning, even though this is what the washerman meant. But he gave another meaning, saying, oh, these clothes, from the other verse, these aren't suitable for you. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, they're not suitable for you because they've been already worn by the king. You should wear something more fine and not the remnants of this demon's clothes. And then he explains that if I give them to you, then the king's men will see this and will become angry at me, and they will kill me, tie me up, bind me, kill me, loot my house and everything. So, Krishna, how can I give them to you? I'll get into so much trouble, and also they're not suitable for you. So if he would have said something like that, even though he was saying no, then that would have been more appropriate, because there are different ways to say no, and there's different ways to say yes also. And he was very, very arrogant. The washerman was very arrogant. And again, he was proud of being the king's servant, but he wasn't intelligent enough to serve the supreme king. So, if the washerman thus spoke in a brazen way, the son of Devaki became angry. And then, merely with his fingertips, he separated the man's head from his body. He killed him. Prabhupada explains it like this in the Krishna book. Unfortunately, the washerman was a servant of Kamsa, and therefore could not appreciate the demand of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the effect of bad association. He could have immediately delivered the clothing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and promised him all good fortune. But being a servant of Kamsa, the sinful demon could not accept the offer. Instead of being pleased, he was very angry and refused the Lord's request, saying, how is it that you are asking for clothing which is meant for the king? The washerman then began to instruct Krishna and Balaram, making boys, in the future, don't be so impudent as to ask for things which belong to the king. Otherwise, you'll be punished by the government men. They will arrest you, punish me, punish you, and you'll be in difficulty. I have practical experience with this fact. Anyone who unlawfully wants to use the king's property is very severely punished. On hearing this, Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, became very angry at the washerman, and striking him with the upper portion of his hand, he separated the man's head from his body, and the washerman fell down dead
on the ground. In this way, the Lord confirmed the statement in the Brahma Samhita that every limb of his body is capable of doing everything he likes without his sword, simply with his hand. He cut off the head of the washerman. This is proof that the Supreme Lord is omnipotent. If he wants to do something, he can do it without extraneous help. Then what happened? So the washerman wasn't alone. He was the chief washerman, and he had assistant washermen. And what do you think the other washermen did?
Run for his life.
They ran as fast as they could away, because they had learned their lesson. The employees of the washerman immediately dispersed, leaving the clothing. Okay. Now, before we discuss this a little further, who wants to take the washerman's side and propose an argument that he was actually acting improperly? Okay.
Well, according to his conception of who he was, his identity, duty in life, he acted responsibly.
Give an example, or a contemporary example.
If you live within a society under the rule of the government, you have to obey. Know your place, know your duty, follow the laws.
Just like if someone came to you and said, give me a car. And it wasn't even your car. It belonged to the king or something like that. Would you give it to him? Okay. Who would like to take? Who would like to argue the other side now? Answer that argument.
There are ways and means of saying no to somebody.
Okay, that's one point.
You could say, like you said, you could say it in a very tasteful way. You could say, I don't know if this is a suitable argument. You know, this is my service to do this, and I don't think I can actually give this to you.
He was very proud, that was one problem. He wasn't proud, he was just a servant of the king, a washerman, and yet he was proud that he was Kamsa's washerman. Other, on the other side, did you want to?
I'm still thinking.
Still digesting. Yes.
The Lord is the final proprietor of everything, after all. And he was not able to recognize Krishna as such due to his bad association.
What was his bad association?
I thought he was a servant of Kamsa, so what worse can he get?
Yeah, you can't get much worse association than Kamsa, who was trying to kill Krishna.
For example, Akrura was also a servant of Kamsa, but he had devotion for Krishna, whereas he was proud to be a servant of Kamsa. The wrong side, therefore his intelligence powered over.
And everyone knew who Krishna was, too, because he said, you're used to going around the forest and the mountains. So it wasn't that he was just somebody wandering in. He knew that this was Krishna, and everyone in Mathura, as we heard, had already heard about the wonderful deeds of Krishna.
You'd also be able to see other people showing respect.
Yeah.
Did this take place like in a kind of public area, or there was just the washerman and his assistants?
Yeah, they were just walking down the road.
Because usually when people go and wash, you know, by the river, there's plenty of people washing their clothes there, and could have watched the whole scene.
Well, it was on a public road, so people did wash it, but it wasn't, he was walking with the clothes, he wasn't just washing them.
Yeah,
okay. So this is something that it can be hard for a conditioned soul to accept, that everything belongs to Krishna, and if we don't give Krishna what he wants, then we're wrong, by definition. And we are trapped by the material energy. It is hard for conditioned soul to accept that nothing ultimately is ours in this world, and our natural position is to fully surrender to Krishna. and what he wants, and that's what it means. And look what he asked Arjuna to do. He didn't ask him, if he asked Arjuna, so if you've sent him to the battlefield and please get me some clothes. You know, that wouldn't have been a problem for Arjuna, but look what he asked Arjuna to do, to surrender to. Like Arjuna was a warrior, and he asked him to fight. And this fellow was a washerman, and he asked for the clothes. But look who Arjuna had to fight. He had to fight his relatives, his dear, dear grandfather, Bhishma, his teacher, Drona, Kripa, such respected people.
In today's world, people would be more, instead of not being accepted, being accepted more, they would expect more an outcome in diplomacy than an extreme, Krishna's extreme behavior, behaving someone because that person refuses to hand over the clothes.
But that wasn't the only reason, again.
Yeah.
He was arrogant. And angry, and he was arrogant. So people would expect that Krishna, you shouldn't act like that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So what's our response to that?
No.
Well, it's probably lighter than what Krishna's response is, anyway.
How would you react if somebody behaved like this towards you?
Huh?
We could always say,
well, we know what we would do. We would do what the washerman's friends did. We'd run as fast as we possibly could. See, this is a hard point to accept, that Krishna, not us, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is Swatantra, and he is the absolute good, and everything he does is absolutely good. And we are tiny, insignificant souls, and our duty is to please him. The conditioned soul, or the mind of the conditioned soul, will always find a way to rebel against that simple fact that we are tiny and insignificant and we belong to Krishna and nothing is actually ours. And not only that, there's nothing that we can actually do to please Krishna because he's not in need of anything. But when he asks for something, it is our greatest fortune that we have an opportunity to please him. There's like, because anything in the material world, first of all, there's nothing that's ours, ultimately. Look at it from a philosophical point of view. Things that are ours, your own, you take with you. Just like you can take that coat with you when you leave Rajasthan Prabhu. But if you try to take the chair, it's going to be a problem. You can't take it with you because the chair is not yours. So there's nothing we're going to take with us. It's an obvious baby point. So if we have the opportunity to use something that's temporarily in our possession in such a way that it's going to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is the greatest fortune. And this is very hard for the mind of a conditioned soul to accept, because we think ourselves in a position to judge the actions of the Supreme Lord. This is the mind. The mind is what, how would you describe the mind of a person who judges? Well, say if there's a, since Krishna is unlimitedly powerful, unlimitedly, and we're tiny and insignificant. Just use an example that's not proportionate. But say if there's a person, a little boy in the second grade, who knows A, B, C, and D, and there's an exalted, eminent physicist that he meets, the little boy, and the physicist starts showing him the type of equations he's working with. And the boy starts to explain to the physicist that it doesn't make any sense, and this, how could it be right, and this is wrong, and etc., etc. How would you describe a boy? What word would you give for that boy?
Impudent.
And one other one, that's a good one.
Foolish.
Another one?
Ignorant.
What else?
Bold.
Bold.
Arrogant.
Huh? Arrogant. What else? You could use all kinds of words with these flavors. So that sort of describes the washerman. He's just a servant, after all. You know, a dhobi, a washerman, isn't like the most exalted member of the society. He's just a washerman. He goes down to the river, he beats the clothes, and he gets hire some people to work with him because he's the king. But he's only a washerman. And did he act, what were the words, in an impudent way, an arrogant way, a proud way? He was ignorant. So this is what happens to arrogant, ignorant people. Proud, what was the word that you used? First word? Impudent. So this is actually, these are the qualities of the material mind. I mean, every day, the mind gets into those same kind of moods, and what's going to happen? So
this is the material mind. So anyway, so Krishna effortlessly tells them.
So if we say that why did Krishna shouldn't have done that? He should have acted more diplomatically. He should have done a win-win situation. What's another?
He should set an example.
At least he's doing his duty. At least he's loyal. That's a good quality.
He was trying his best, you know, and you can't. He set a bad example.
Yeah, and he doesn't do what you want, whatever, and then you just chop off their heads. Yeah, so whose side is our mind taking when we start thinking like that? The washerman's side.
It's
us, right? The side of the washerman. So our mind identifies with the arrogance of the washerman, and it tends to do that.
But society does that also. I mean, our atmosphere around is full of these type of phraseologies.
But the mentality is from time immemorial. Mm. It's not a new thing. Mm. You know, here we say win-win, you know, and that's, you know, came out 2 years ago, but on the other side, people would have said other things. But in older cultures, they know that they always take the side of the power. Otherwise you get into trouble. It's such arrogance. I remember the first time when I went to Hong Kong, I was so surprised because, not to speak of India, that when a big car is going down the road, somebody to, you know, the United States or Australia or something, where, you know, there's a walk road, you know, the walk path. So when you step on the road and all the trucks, the cars, everyone has to stop for you. But if you try that in India, you'll never see the light, you never get to the other side. And Hong Kong was like that too. That, you know, they have the intelligence to yield to power. Otherwise you'll get crushed. So Krishna is the supreme power. And the very intelligent is to yield to him. Because otherwise, just by the flick of his hand or the material energy, it finishes. One, that's the actual situation. We could say, I don't like it, it's not fair. We can, you know, say all kinds of things like that. We can protest all we want. But it's more intelligent to surrender, because if you protest against reality, you lose. Your protests just don't make any sense, because it's reality. You can protest that the sun rises at this time, it should rise at a different time, but what is the meaning of your protest?
Have a say.
Huh?
Have your say.
That's a real good one. That's a real contemporary one.
I guess
people make cases to the best on the concept of morality.
And Krishna doesn't fit in, does he?
That's right.
He defines morality. And everything that he does is good. That's the definition of good. That's why it's called the Param Satya. So this is the position of surrender. And therefore, even that Western theologians, they, especially Western theologians, have such a hard time accepting even the existence of God, because they say, if God is all good and there is evil in this world, or bad things happen to people in this world, either he's not all powerful and he can keep them from happening, or he's not all good. So with what does that mean, basically? Saying that this is the way that he organizes things isn't the best way, and if he would just listen to proper reason and do it the way that I think is better, then certainly the world would be a better place to live. So this is arrogant, it's ignorant, it's impudent, it's proud, and this is the mind of the conditioned soul.
I'm trying to think if it's proper to reason about judging Krishna in a particular way when he is out of Vrindavan and when he is in Vrindavan, or does it make any difference?
Give us an example of what you mean.
Well, the way Krishna behaved in Vrindavan, within the Vrindavan pastimes, he is known and he is seen as the original Krishna. When he steps out of Vrindavan, he is more like Narayan.
He's Vasudev Krishna. But still, there's certain things that Swayam Bhagavan Krishna does in Vrindavan that he doesn't do in Mathura. But those things are not these things.
Right.
He leaves his flute behind, and he leaves his special relationship with the Gopikas behind. And he does a few things like that. He does some of his pastimes. But
saying is,
he still always gets what he wants.
Certain things could be more justified as Asvati Krishna, because he is more like a prince or a king. Whereas as a child in Vrindavan, okay.
Let's face it. When Krishna wanted to do something in Vrindavan, he just did it anyway. He didn't care if the girls were married or not. He just went and danced with them in the full moon night. Let's face it, he just does what he wants to do all the time. He's the transcendental autocrat. He's Svatantra. And what happens, and we see, it's wonderful, because Krishna got what he wanted anyway. He just took the cause. And that's just the way the absolute transcendental autocrat is. He's the boss, constitutionally, and we're his servants, constitutionally. We either cooperate with him, or we don't. He gets his way anyway.
The heavy thing is that if you can see the watchman inside each one of us, are you ready to accept? Yeah.
No.
It's heavy. Because you make it better than
but
it's heavy.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's heavy.
But that would happen either way.
Get your head shot? Which?
By giving the clothes, Kamsa would kill him. Not giving the clothes, he was killed. So he was supposed to be killed. What I don't understand is, if somebody comes to me today,
yeah,
and saying, give me something which doesn't belong to me,
yeah,
if I give him that thing, I'm going to die because of that, well, obviously I won't do it. Even some say, okay, this guy is a magician, he's a David Copperfield, he can go through the wall of China, or he can do some magical stuff. These 5 years after that, and we have some authorities which we believe Krishna is Krishna. But, you know, in that time, you know, Krishna was, I don't understand if that washerman could understand the reality of existence of Krishna. You know, if in that, you know, position, he could really understand who Krishna is,
okay,
it could be more fair, you know, than...
Okay. Let's take it from the point of view that he didn't understand who Krishna was. So that means he was ignorant. Yes? So, ignorance is not an excuse. That's one thing that we learn. If we're ignorant, an example that Prabhupada used to give was that if you're in India, they drive on the, well, maybe it's not a good example because they drive on the right side, the left side, you know, whatever. And either, huh?
There's no side in India.
So many sides. Every side. What is it? There's one person was telling me, who was telling me this? Oh, your bunkie was saying that he was driving and he stopped somewhere to make a turn in his car and he put on his signal. Because he stopped, and the guy just smashed into him. And he put on his right indicator, so because he's making a right turn. So the man came over, because in India, of course, if you hit somebody, the system is that you have to accuse him. Even if it's your fault, you have to accuse him, and then he accuses you, and then you yell at each other really well, and then that way, otherwise, if you accept that you did something wrong, you have to pay, so you never did anything wrong. So he started accusing him. You stopped in the middle of the road and just... And Bhagi said, well, turn my indicator, you know, that's to let everyone know that I'm turning over here. And the guy looked at him and said, you think this is Delhi or something? This is Mathura.
Convincing.
There's something sly about that though, right? It's self-preservation. Self-preservation, by definition, is selfish.
Yeah, the first point is ignorance, right? That ignorance, if you don't know, it doesn't save you from the consequences of not knowing. If you don't know fire is hot, and you touch the fire, and you can say, I'm sorry, my dear fire, I'm ignorant, what will happen to you? Therefore, don't burn me? No. That's one point. And the second point is, there was arrogance on his part. Deep arrogance on his part. And the arrogance doesn't spring, you could say it springs from his ignorance, but it springs from something deeper and worse than that. It springs from the material mind. Because soon as one has false ego, turns his back on Krishna, the quality of pride and greed and etc. Material desires, loba, matsarja, envy. Immediately, as soon as there is false ego, these qualities spring up. And we see also as Krishna goes down the road that there are other people who one could say had as much opportunity to know who Krishna was as the washerman. And these people, as you can hear yesterday's class, but the ladies of Mathura and the Brahmins, they all gave Krishna so much respect. So there was some arrogance on his part. And where does Prabhupada, what we read in here, where did this quality of his mind that caused him to turn so venomously like a snake against Krishna, where did it come from? Bad association from Kamsa, because he was associating with someone who was so envious of Krishna. So by association he took on that quality. Okay, keep going. No, keep asking.
No, I'm just saying there are people nowadays even claiming to be God. I would know that.
You mean people who are not God? Who
I don't know. But some people in this world claiming to be God.
Well, are they God?
I don't know. So am I?
Wait.
No, I'm asking because you know it's not easy to realize, you know.
No, but before
Krishna was here nowadays.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, if someone says that I'm God, and you say, okay, let me give him a chance. Okay. Because if he's God, I want to take advantage of his presence. But if he isn't God, but claiming to be God, I want to keep as far away from him as possible because it means he's demonic. So what would you do?
Test him? Is that what you mean?
Well, that's your responsibility if you're going to take that position.
How can I do that? I don't really know if somebody can do...
Well, then well, you don't immediately accept that they're God, then, certainly.
No. I wouldn't accept.
No, because God, being a God is a big thing.
Exactly.
It's not a small thing. Being God, you have to be unlimitedly powerful. And Krishna showed that he was unlimitedly powerful. After.
But still, I prefer to... I understand God through the authorities, you know. Somebody, a pure devotee that I'm, you know, I trust so much that I know and I believe in him and I know he can, he's got the intelligence to realize who's God and who's not.
So by good association, you'd find out.
Exactly.
And how about, so what example is given by the washerman?
Bad association. Which can blind the person.
Which can blind a person, because we see that other people weren't blinded.
Mm-hmm.
And watch, listen to what happens, see, because then there's two more people that he knows right now. So that, you know, one could say that because Krishna's next going to meet, he takes the cloth and then he meets a tailor who fashions, and the tailor immediately sees that Krishna's the Supreme Lord, and he sees the opportunity to do some service, and he fashions some clothes for Krishna. And then, and Krishna benedicts him and is pleased. And then he sees a garland maker. And as soon as the garland maker sees Krishna, Krishna doesn't even ask him for anything, but he recognizes who Krishna was. So Krishna just says, as you want, you can do. And he immediately finds the best garland for him and gives it to him. So this is different consciousnesses that we're seeing. So if we make a case for the person in bad consciousness and take his side a bit,
tell something about
us. Sort of indication that we're looking for a way out to justify the way our mentality is. Because we, I think we all tend to identify with the washerman a little bit. What's that?
He kind of laughed and said, you're not doing that.
Huh?
He kind of laughed and said, laugh it off as if it's not a washerman inside you.
Yeah. There's a washerman inside that doesn't want to give Krishna what actually doesn't belong to our false master, but belongs actually to him. So one could say, well, how do I know that you're really, this is your argument right now, how do I know that you're really the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Right?
Yes.
And that's your point there.
The first point.
One way to find out is to deny him what he wants. That's how the washerman found out. That's one way to find out. But that wasn't just...
Costly.
It's a costly education. But there's other ways to find out. But in any case, he wasn't respectful. He was arrogant because he had another master. He had a master who was a demon. And he was surrendered to a demonic master.
What's the destination?
Glorious. He got his head cut off by Krishna. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the meaning of the absolute good.
Right.
That everything he touches turns good.
Right.
But that there's better ways to deal with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because that's just his mercy. That everyone he deals with is benefited in one way or another. But keep asking.
Now, if the other one is really as a duty of a person, like Prabhupada said, it's just in a normal case, not necessarily in Krishna's case, but we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't, if somebody asked us to give me
your car. You give me a taxi.
Not my car. Give me, for example,
like your taxi.
Government car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, then you have to do your duty. But what is the last part of the Bhagavad Gita? Sarvadhamam pratyaja, mame kam sarambhaja, means.
So then there's a duty above a duty.
Yeah, that's the point. That the highest. See, that's. That is the point. There are so many duties in life. But if we go through life and perform all the other duties, but don't please Krishna, which is the highest duty, we've ended up with perhaps some material piety, but we've actually wasted our life. Because life is meant for something more than that.
We didn't get it.
Huh?
We didn't get it, that life.
And therefore, you have to, and look at Arjuna. You could criticize Arjuna because he could say, "Look at him! Look what he did! He killed his relatives." I mean, what kind of a human being would kill your grandfather, the person who taught you, and you couldn't make it? And look at the result of it. It was terrible. Society. Become ruined and things like that. Look at a terrible thing that Arjuna did. One can make the case. But the external event may look like that, but what was really going on was something different. And if one does something like that, gives away the car of the government or kills one's family members, on one's own account, then the result is terrible. But if somehow or another, it's Krishna's desire, then to do anything other than to give Krishna what he wants is allowing the mind its full reign over, you know, keep us in the material world.
I guess our doubts really show that we don't have full faith that Krishna's real world.
You have to really, well, it brings up, you know, if you really think deeply upon it, you find out what, who you are and what your limitations are, and you understand that what you have to do the rest of your life.
And why?
And then very often, even if we know that this is what Krishna wants, we still don't want to do it. And all those other things are excuses. Well, how do I know that you're really telling me what Krishna wants? And how do I know that Krishna's really... It's all an excuse because I don't want to do what anyone wants me to do. I just want to do what I want because that's what I like to do. After all, who's the most important person around here? It's me. Huh?
I'm doing my best, you can't ask more than that. That's a big cop out.
Yeah.
It's against my nature. Yeah. You know, I'm this kind of person, I can't possibly be asked to do something like that. I'm sure Krishna doesn't really expect that of me. He must know it.
So what's he being asked to do here? Like in the Bhagavad Gita, we see an example of someone who doesn't want to do something, but he's a devotee. So when Krishna asks him to do it, Krishna explains everything to him, and he does it. So here we're seeing a very small Bhagavad Gita, where the person isn't a devotee, and Krishna asks him to do something, and he just refuses. In fact, he gets angry at Krishna for asking. How dare you ask me for this? Don't you know that I'm not an ordinary washerman? I am the king's washerman. How dare you ask? You're the one who's going to get in trouble. And we said, you know, if you ask like this again, you're lucky I'm not telling the king's men on you, because you'd get into trouble. And he doesn't care. He just wanted, this is what, and remember, Krishna's on a mission here. And he's a servant of, another, looking at it from just a different perspective, Krishna's the Supreme Lord, and looking at it from a different perspective, he's a member of the Yadu dynasty. And everyone in Mathura knows that he's a member of the Yadu dynasty. And Kamsa is the thief, because he's thrown his father in prison and taken over the country. And this washerman, so who's the big thief? So Kamsa's the big thief. So this person is the servant of the biggest thief. And he's not saying you shouldn't take things from the, shouldn't steal from the biggest thief. It's like you shouldn't steal from the mafia, or else you'll get in trouble or something like that. Is this some righteousness in telling someone that? So no matter how, if you look at it, if you keep looking at it, you see that it's, the fault is on the watchman's side. Even if you look at it from the point that Krishna's not the supreme, just looking at him, he's coming. But the washerman's attitude was improper. And Krishna spoke very sweetly to him. And the washerman was very arrogant. What to speak of Krishna, was who he was. And Kamsa had brought him here to be killed, this little boy, and he's going to pit him against all these wrestlers. These big, powerful wrestlers, and Krishna's like just a child at this time. And these wrestlers are the most powerful wrestlers in the kingdom.
How old is he?
Well, you could say he's 16, or you could say he's 11. But he looks just like a little boy. So much so, when he walks in the wrestling arena, people think, this is not fair, I don't want to watch this kind of a fight.
Underage. Legally,
he's not allowed to wrestle with them. These are the most powerful wrestlers in the kingdom. So Kamsa's trying to kill him.
Obviously.
Yeah, and Krishna knows this. And Krishna is showing that I don't care for Kamsa and his law and his order. And everyone who sides with Kamsa ends up with the same result that Kamsa ends up with, enmity with Krishna and death. So one can see this as, because Krishna rewards those who are good, kills those who are bad. So it's very it's carrot and stick. This isn't what brings love to the heart exactly. That, oh, if I do what Krishna wants and give him what he wants, like we'll see other people do, then I'll get a good rewards, and if I don't do what Krishna wants, he'll chop my head off. So that's not love. One thing is, we come from the land of love, Vrindavan, just prior to this. So we've seen what love is. The people in Vrindavan don't care for any reward at all. They just want to please Krishna. And here, actually, the people who want to please Krishna, they're not doing it at all for the reward. They're doing it because they recognize, they're attracted to how wonderful he is. And they recognize that that he's the Supreme and they just want to please him. So everything is deep. Okay, let's stop. So the washerman lost his head. With Arjuna, Krishna asked him to do something. Arjuna said no. And Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to him, but he didn't even speak to the washerman. There's one point. Why didn't he at least explain to him? Well, the washerman, he was arrogant. And Arjuna, on the other hand, Shishastri Hamsari Mampapa, he surrendered to Krishna, please tell me, instruct me. Mm-hmm. So if we take a humble attitude, then we'll get the proper instruction to understand what is right and what is wrong, what Krishna wants us to do, and who is Krishna. And if we take an arrogant attitude, as if we know everything, and our master is Kamsa, and how dare we challenge our master, we get into so much trouble, and we end up trouble.
It seems like it's easy to fall into a position where you have half, you've taken a humble position to a point. But if you're pushed, you have
the false ego comes up. So the only thing that can overcome it is the positive. The false ego doesn't, it makes, it plays good, as if good,
yes.
But it doesn't die. But it can die when the subtle body goes. And that means that one actually is devoted. Devotion will actually remove it. Devotional service dissolves the subtle body. Otherwise it plays dead. And it learns how to act humbly while still. Act meekly while still just waiting. And when it's poked.
The solution to that dilemma is to strengthen
devotion. First, and that begins with what Ali is sort of indicating, is that you have to, with knowledge, with some bandhagyan.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have knowledge, and then from when the conviction is there, then one can proceed. Did you finish the rest? There's still a little left, I don't mind.
There you go. That's the very last book of the